Even in literature or art, no man who cares about originality will ever be original. It's the man who's only thinking about doing a good job or telling the truth who becomes really original and doesn't notice it. Even in social life, you'll never make a good impression on other people until you've stopped thinking what sort of impression you make. That principle runs all through life from the top to the bottom. Give up yourself and you'll find your real self. Lose your life and you'll save it. Submit to death, submit with every fiber of your being, and you'll find eternal life. Look for Christ and you'll get him, and with him everything else thrown in. Look for yourself, and you'll get only hatred, loneliness, despair, and ruin.
Good morning. I'm Pastor Corey, one of the pastors on staff here at Legacy, and thank you for being here this morning as we start this new series. Whether you're in person or on a screen, we welcome you. This new series, Saints and Sinners, was designed to bring forth people who have influenced our faith, people who have said and done and changed the world through their faith. But these people were not professional pastors. They didn't go to seminary. Their vocation wasn't to stand on a platform like this on a Sunday. These people came from other places, and we have I'm loving this series. Because these are all people who have come out of life to influence others. So this series is called Saints and Sinners. The word saints comes from Paul, actually. We call ourselves those who believe. We call ourselves Christians, correct? Oh, excellent. It's a good thing I can hear rocks rolling. All right. But Paul, in the early days of his letters, the word Christian hadn't come about yet. Those who believed were called saints. They were called saints. So all of these people who believe in here that I'm looking at, you're all saints. But I got some news for you. Those same people I'm looking at, you're also sinners. The word sinner comes from archery, actually, missing the mark. The very center of a target is where you want the arrow to go, the bullseye. And if we think of that target, that bullseye, as God's will for us, that's where we want to send our arrows every time, is to the center. For those of you who maybe are not up on your archery, then that hole at the end of the cornhole board is where you want to send your beanbag every time, right through that hole. And when we make it through that hole perfectly, we hit the center of that target, then we're doing God's will perfectly in that moment. But when we miss that, when we miss that mark, it's called sin. So every single one of us in here is a sinner. I am a sinner. I am. And so are you. So this series, Saints and Sinners, comes from that. It is ordinary people who have come forward. Now the first person we're going to talk about, welcome to class today. I hope you read your assignment. How many of you have heard of C.S. Lewis? Good. So when I was stuck in Fargo because of the storm, you guys were having a blizzard and I was having an ice storm in Fargo, I decided to go to some used bookstores. Oddly enough, C.S. Lewis is so popular that you can only find a few books. So these are mine. You can't have these. But if you would like, I found two books by C.S. Lewis, one Miracles and the other one Daily Readings from his classical works. after the service is over, I know how this works. I was in school. After the service is over, feel free to take one of these. I'm going to put them on the front row here. So that if you want them, you can take one, okay? No fighting, please. C.S. Lewis, Clive Staples Jack Lewis, was born in Ireland near Belfast. He had an idyllic childhood, he and his older brother, Warren, or Warney. The Clive Staples, when he was 3 years old, he told his mother that I don't like the name Clive. From now on, call me Jack. And it stuck. So his family and his friends called him Jack. It wasn't his legal name, but that's what he wanted to call himself. So in all of his writings, it is C.S. Lewis, and the C.S. is Clive Staples, a name that he hated. Just out of curiosity, how many of you don't like your first name? There's a few of you. All right. Yeah, okay. There's a few of you. So just change it to Clive Staples and you're good. C.S. Lewis, in his early years, tells the story of his brother Warney creating a garden, a diorama, in a tin. Now, back when he was a child, crackers didn't come in boxes, they came in tins. You take the lid off the tin, flip it upside down, and it becomes a tray. And his brother Warney made a beautiful landscape in this tin and brought it to C.S. Lewis, his younger brother. And Lewis says that he saw something in that tin. He saw something idyllic, beautiful. He calls it joy. That feeling stuck with him his entire life. And I want you to remember that joy, that word joy that he saw in that tin, because it's going to come up later. Actually, he and his brother created their own little world called Boxen World and wrote stories about the people who lived in that tin. It was amazing. Even at an early age, he was a storyteller. But when Lewis was 9 years old, his mother died. Now, in UK culture back then, when a parent dies and the surviving parent cannot handle the responsibility of raising children and working, the children are sent to boarding school. And in this case, they went to boarding school in Britain. So Jack and Warney were sent to Britain at boarding school where things were hard. It was very difficult at boarding school. Jack had just lost his mother. UK boarding schools are not known for being nice places. And while Jack and Warney were there, the school shut down because the person running the school was taken to court and classified as insane. Very difficult conditions. Okay? So their school system is different than ours. So once Lewis left that school, then he went to college, then university. When he entered college, he had a tutor that was not only an atheist, but hated Christianity. She started to mold Lewis's mind towards hating his beliefs as a child, saying that they're ridiculous, made up, fairy tales. They were stupid. And so Lewis started his slide movement towards atheism. Once he had graduated university, he was then put into a conflict known as the First World War. Because he graduated university, he was sent as an officer. And he was sent to the French front in the Somme. How many of you know about the history of World War I and the Somme? Thousands of soldiers died there. Thousands. It was brutal, very brutal. Lewis was injured while he was there, came home, and his injury was so bad that he was not sent back to the lines, but he started teaching. But it was there when he started teaching in Oxford that he began to ask serious questions. He wanted to be done. He either wanted to be done with religion or to accept it. Now understand, this is mental, only in his mind, logically. He had his childhood, he was raised with Christianity. Now he's an atheist, a complete atheist. He even writes poetry against God. But he wants to be done with it. He wants to logically figure out, is God real or not? So that he cannot have to think about it again. So he starts to search. He asks two friends for advice, Warren Barfield and another guy you might have heard of by the name of J.R.R. Tolkien. Anybody heard of him? Yeah? Yeah, he wrote a book, I think, called The Hobbit. Then a series, maybe The Lord of the Rings, I think, is what he's known for. Yeah. So he started to ask questions of those people, serious questions. And logically, Lewis came to the point where he accepted God. Hear me. Logically, Lewis came to the point where he accepted God's existence. And that's where the quote that Brandon said came from. He was the most reluctant convert in all of the United Kingdom because he didn't want this. He didn't want to accept it. He came kicking and screaming, but logically he had to accept it. A few years later, what was in his head made it through the bottleneck and down to his heart. And he accepted God into his heart, which changed everything for him. Lewis now started to use his significant talents as a storyteller and as a writer to transform how people saw theology. Now, we've had this discussion before, so let's have it again. But I'm going to see who of you were paying attention all those other times. Theology. Theo, meaning? Oh, you were all sleeping during these? Come on. Theo, meaning? God, yes. Ology, meaning? Study of. So what does theology mean? Study of God. Very simple. Theology means study of God. But when we study something in detail, it can get very complicated, and we start to use big $20 words. Now, Brandon and I have got a collection of these words. We keep them on the shelf. We dust them off every once in a while when he and I are talking. But for everyone else, they're worthless. So what C.S. Lewis does in his major talent as a storyteller is he uses everyday occurrences, everyday things, and explains those words, explains that thinking, helps us understand theology in its most complex way. And C.S. Lewis is a genius at this. Now, Lewis, let's have a picture of him. This is Lewis here. You can see this is him writing letters. He was a prolific letter writer. He talks later in his journals that this became a burden to him. He was getting 300 to 400 letters a day, and he would answer every single letter. So he employed his brother Warney to write on his behalf. Warney never just wrote C.S. Lewis. He said, "This is Warney. Sorry you don't get the real thing, but this is what my brother would say." Okay, so, but Lewis always wrote back when people would write him. Now, Lewis's life is marked heavily by Jesus Christ. All of his books that he writes, and this is just a few, if I was to bring them all, I wouldn't be able to reach the top. Is marked by the influence of Jesus Christ. In the book of Philippians, Paul writes to the Philippians, the town of Philippi, because they're having some troubles. They're not getting along. They're arguing. They cannot agree. So go figure, right? It's a letter of Paul. There's something going on. And so he writes to them and he tells them this amazing bit. In Philippians, if then there is any encouragement in Christ, any consolation from love, any sharing in the Spirit, any compassion and sympathy, make my joy complete, be of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit. They were fighting so much that they couldn't agree on anything. And so Paul is telling them, okay, you guys don't get along. You don't agree on this. But at least agree to agree on love. To agree on not being selfish and conceited. Agree in humility to regard others as better than yourselves. Let each of you look not to your own interests, but to the interests of each other. Let the same mind be in you that was in Christ Jesus. Now, this is quite a thing for him to say. I want you to think like Jesus thought. That's what Paul is telling them, and that's what Paul is telling us. And now what I'm going to read for you is the first part of the oldest, as far as we know, the oldest hymn, the oldest worship song that we know of. You guys ready for this? The oldest worship song. Oops. Did I miss it? No, it means same mind as Christ, it was in Christ. Okay. Who though he was in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited, but emptied himself, taking, I screwed that up, didn't I? This is not the oldest part. Am I right? I am right. All right. This is what happens when you don't use notes. Taking the form of a slave, being born in human likeness, and being found in human form. He humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. In other words, God himself loves you and loves me so much that he was willing to throw off the mantle, the title, the crown, the everything that comes with being God, throw that off, wrap himself in flesh, be born as a baby, live his life like you and me, and he was willing to die on a cross for us. That's what I call service. Lewis lived his life trying to exemplify the Jesus that he had come to accept. Soon after his conversion, he was asked to write, he was asked to write a book called The Problem of Pain. This book, right around the time that World War II is now starting, he was asked to identify, to talk about how God views suffering. Cindy, you got that? How God views suffering, the problem of pain. This is in the preface to this book. When Mr. Ashley Sampson suggested to me the writing of this book, I asked leave to be allowed to write it anonymously, since if I were to say that I really thought about what I thought about pain, I should be forced to make statements of such apparent fortitude that they would become ridiculous if anyone knew who made them. Anonymity was rejected as inconsistent with the series, but Mr. Sampson pointed out that I could write a preface explaining that I do not live up to my own principles. This exhilarating program I am now carrying out. Let me confess at once, in the words of the good Walter Hilton, that throughout this book, I feel myself so far from true feeling of that I speak, that I cannot else but cry mercy and desire after it as I may. Sounds like the words that the Moravians gave John Wesley when he was wrestling with faith. Preach faith until you have it. If any real theologian reads these pages, he will very easily see they are work of a layman and an amateur, except in the last two chapters, parts of which are admittedly speculative. I believe myself to be restating ancient and orthodox doctrines. If any part of the books are original in the sense of being novel or unorthodox, they are so against my will and as a result of my ignorance. I write, of course, as a layman of the Church of England, John Wesley's church, but I have tried to assume nothing that is not professed by all baptized and communicating Christians. A self-righteous theologian who thinks better of everyone else, would they write a preface like that? No? No, yeah, I already lost you, you fell asleep, okay. C.S. Lewis admits that his profession as a professor at Oxford is medieval literature. That is his goal, that is what he does. That is his job. But now he's been asked as a layperson to write about the problem of suffering and pain in our lives. I wonder if someone was to ask you to write a book about suffering and pain, what would you say? Would you say you're not qualified? Would you say you couldn't do it because you don't have a degree? What would you say? You'd say no? A lot of people would. World War II comes, and people are hunkering down in their homes because there's V-bombs flooding London. Nightly, there's air raids. The German bombers are flying over, and they're decimating London. Buildings are falling. The people are scared. The BBC, the British Broadcasting Company, who is in charge of all broadcasting in Britain, decides to ask Lewis to do a series about right and wrong. What is right and wrong? Can you picture this in your mind? People are hunkered down with their shades closed so there's no light so the bombers don't drop a bomb on their building. And they're hunkered down, hearing the bombs go off around them, and they're right up against the radio listening to C.S. Lewis. What you heard at the very beginning is what you would have heard while the bombs were going off. It would be C.S. Lewis's voice telling you what is right and what is wrong. Though C.S. Lewis was asked to do that at three different occasions, those three talks on the radio were brought together and made into a book called Mere Christianity. And have you read that one, Mere Christianity? No. Well, the rule for all of us is perfectly simple. Do not waste time bothering about whether you love your neighbor. Act as if you do. As soon as we do this, we find one of the greatest secrets. When we are behaving as if you've loved someone, you will presently come to love him. If you injure someone you dislike, you will find yourself disliking him more. If you do him a good turn, you will find yourself disliking him less. Those are excellent words, and taken out of context, they're nice. It's a nice sentiment. But in the context of buildings being blown up and war going on, Lewis tries to bring everybody to the single mind of love, of forgiveness, and treating everyone as a neighbor. Later that year, Lewis will write again in a series of essays in a book called The World's Last Night and Other Essays. Lewis reveals the impact of Christianity in his life and how he sees Christianity. Christianity is not, Jesus' love and forgiveness is not one aspect of his life. It's not a box that you check off and do occasionally. It is something that filters through his entire view of the world. And he exhorts people, he tells people to do the same. And you have to forgive the reference because it is the 50s. And so they have different sensibilities. Women sometimes have the problem of trying to judge by artificial light how a dress will look by daylight. That is very like the problem of all of us. To dress our souls not for the electric lights of the present world, but for the daylight of the next. The good dress is the one that will face the light, will face that light, for the light will last longer. C.S. Lewis had a profound view of what is coming next. So in his series, The Chronicles of Narnia, how many of you have read The Chronicles of Narnia? Familiar? How many of you have seen the movie? Yeah, more have seen the movie. The books are better, as always. In the very last, there was no movie made of this one, but in the very last book, The Last Battle, there's a scene in which the children die in a train accident. And they end up in a place that looks very much like the Narnia that they knew, but the colors are bolder, the leaves are sharper. Everything seems so much more real, so much more vibrant, that the world that they had seen before seems like a shadow, a mere taste of what this Narnia is. So you remember that time of joy when he looked into that tin and saw that world and saw something that looked beautiful, perfect, something sharper than life actually was. That's where the concept, I think, that's where the idea of Narnia came from. And so when the Pevensey children die in this train accident and they find themselves in Narnia, in big parentheses, heaven, everything seems more real. And the life that we had lived was simply a shadow, a foretasting of what life was going to be like. So when Lewis says to measure what things look like in your soul and how you live your life, not under the artificial lights of this world, but think of what will look good, what will sustain in the world to come, when everything is sharper, real, and forever. Now, I love, this is a great coincidence, but the joy that Lewis sees there and the joy that he talks about in Narnia is also comes later in his life. Lewis had been a bachelor his entire life. He and his brother lived together in a house that's called the Kilns, and he was a happy bachelor until one day he did a good turn. There was a woman from America there with her two sons, and her husband was abusive, and she needed to get away from him. And so she applied for a divorce. The divorce came, but in order to stay in the UK, she had to get married. So guess who decided to do a good turn and marry her? Not because of love, but because she needed the help. C.S. Lewis. Married Joy. That was her name, Joy. Mary Joy. But what started out as a favor turned into a beautiful, beautiful relationship that turned Lewis's world upside down and helped him to see God and the world differently through relationship. Unfortunately, it was short-lived. Joy had debilitating bone cancer, and she did not live very long after their marriage. Lewis writes a poem after joy has passed. This poem is called Joys That Sting. Oh, do not die, says dawn, for I shall hate all women so. How false the sentence rings, women, but in the life made desolate, it is the joys once shared that have the stings. To take the old walks alone or not at all. To order one pint where I ordered two. To think of and then not to make the small, time-honored joke, senseless to all but you. To laugh, oh, one laugh. To talk upon themes that we talked about when you were there. To make some poor penance of going on. Be kind to one's old friends and seem to care. Well, no one, oh God, through the years will say the simplest common word in just your way. Lewis would go on to write about his grief in a book called The Grief Observed. I read that after my mom passed. It was hard. I recommend it to anyone who's grieving. C.S. Lewis was a teacher, once an atheist, whose life was transformed by God. The most reluctant convert in all of the UK, whose books still influence us, whose life still brings us to Christ. And I will boldly say that any one of you in this room who is not a professional pastor, who hasn't been to seminary, could have that same kind of influence, that same kind of change effect in people's lives if you allow God to work through you and in you. I know it because I've seen it in many of you. I could tell stories as I look at people. I could tell stories about the things that they've done and the people that they've touched. I could tell a lot of stories about things that they've done, people they've influenced. Thank you for that. If God's calling you to ministry, God is calling you into something, let one of us useless professional people know. Because it's really God who works through you and not through us.